Just a reminder that this is a Best of Brian Lehrer show today, so we won't be taking any calls. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. There are no follow-up questions on the SAT, but there are on this show. Today, we're going to revisit the conversation we had about the Scholastic Aptitude Test with Jay Matthews of the Washington Post on Tuesday. Matthews, who writes the Class Struggle blog for the Washington Post about education, was on to talk about a recent study which found that white students score higher than black students on the verbal section of the SAT, although black test takers were found more likely to answer certain harder questions correctly. The recent research is itself a follow-up to some findings from 2003, which came to the same conclusions. Joining me now to present the other side of the story is Lawrence Boonen, who oversees the SAT program at the College Board, the organization which develops and publishes the SAT. Mr. Boonen, thanks so much for coming on. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
And let's just take a minute as a refresher from Tuesday, since the College Board asked to have some rebuttal time, and listen to Jay Matthews' explanation of the research done by Roy Friedel in 2003, which was echoed by this new study out of UCLA, and which you and the College Board have taken issue with.
His theory is that we have different interpretations for. The word bad in some neighborhoods means bad. In some neighborhoods it means good. The word slick in some neighborhoods means slippery. Other neighborhoods it means fashionable. And so those simple Anglo-Saxon words were causing confusion, and that the test, his research seemed to show, was biased against black kids, and if they were given more questions of the sort that had a lot of long words in them, they'd do better on the test.
Washington Post education blogger Jay Matthews citing research in 2003 by Roy Friedel. And Jay went on to say that the College Board and the Educational Testing Service, which administer the exam, do not agree with the findings from either study. So do you want to react to anything specific in that clip? Maybe the different interpretations of words like bad and slick and tight and how that can culturally trip people up?
Well, let me start by saying, Jay's speculation about those words is interesting, but the truth is that the SAT is absolutely fair, and what was not covered in that discussion was the wealth of literature that has shown for many, many years that the SAT is absolutely fair. For example, and I'm quoting now from a report that was released in 2008 by NACAC, that's the National Admissions, the National Association of College Admissions Counseling, and this, they had a commission that comprehensively studied admissions tests, which was chaired by William Fitzsimmons, the Dean of Admissions at Harvard University. And I'm quoting from the report, which says, "A substantial body of literature indicates that test bias has been largely mitigated in today's admissions tests due to extensive research and development of test questions." So that wealth of literature is often not covered. Now, when Jay did his piece in The Atlantic that you referred to in 2003, and he covered that report done by Friedel, he also quoted Robert Lynn in his actual article, and Robert Lynn is a University of Colorado professor and former president of the American Educational Research Association, who Jay quotes as saying he was unimpressed with that work and didn't think there was much there. So the bottom line is that the SAT is absolutely fair, and that these reports that came out have a lot of problems, inconsistent results, and basically are making a mountain out of a molehill.
So what is the public, what are educators in high school or college supposed to do with conflicting data? The data that the UCLA researchers used was from real scores from test takers, I understand, and Friedel, who did that 2003 study, from what I've read, was also using data from the Educational Testing Service. So they got certain results. You're citing studies with other results. What is the college establishment supposed to do with that to be as fair and accurate with respect to high school applicants as they can possibly be?
Well, I would recommend that people go off of the reports that are peer-reviewed and published in reputable scientific journals. The recent piece that came out that Jay covered, which was the Santalisi study, was, first of all, not peer-reviewed, and it a journal that was not not a scientific peer-reviewed journal. So the studies that we're citing are peer-reviewed and are independent researchers, such as the Robert Lynn researcher I just mentioned, as well as Sack and Kinsell at University of Minnesota, and many others. So we would point universities to the scientific peer-reviewed research and ask them to go off that. We very much support scholarly research about the SAT. We're very open about it, and we continue to do that.
My guest from the College Board, as we talk about the most recent controversy over alleged bias in the SATs. We have about 10 minutes. Listeners, if you want to get in with a very specific question for our guest, you can do so at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And Jay Matthews and others have made an argument for keeping the SAT as it is, but changing the way the score is calculated. The RSAT, or revised SAT, is a score which uses only the hardest questions. And they say even if this wasn't a racial issue, even if we just looked at the fact that someone can generally do better on harder questions than easier ones and still get a low score on the test, which purportedly is the case with black students, could that be reason alone to revisit the way the test is scored?
Well, my understanding of the suggestions and implications made by these articles is that they are suggesting that there be more harder questions and less easier questions, which really doesn't make sense when you think about it. Now, for instance, suppose that you had a test with only extremely difficult questions. Then all you would really be able to find out about a student is whether they knew all of it or none of it, because all the questions would be extremely difficult, and you wouldn't be able to find out exactly how much the student did know. The interesting thing about the SAT, which again is the most researched and studied and well-developed test in the world, is that it is fair to all students across all difficulty levels. And when colleges use this test, they really want to know the achievement level of the students, and they may be at various levels of achievement, not just at the highest level. So it's most fair to have questions at all difficulty levels.
When you're testing questions for possible inclusion in the SAT, do you keep track of the ethnicity of who is answering that question correctly in the test runs?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I'm glad you asked that, because the SAT has the most rigorous method for doing that of any test. And in fact, what we do on the SAT, and you may remember this from when you and I took the SAT, there's a section that the students take, which some people call the experimental section or the variable section, but it's at one of the sections of the SAT that you take on test day is not actually scored. And that's where we are trying out new test questions. And what we do is we try out the test questions on students in a real live test situation, because they don't know that that's not a scored part of the test. And we study those questions and analyze them, like you said, by what we call subgroup, or you could say ethnicity. And if any question performs differently for different subgroups, what you have heard referred to as differential item functioning, if that happens, we never put the question on the test. And in fact, the research reports that you're referring to actually confirm that there's no appreciable differential item functioning across the entire test. In other words, the test questions that are getting on the SAT have extremely low differential functioning. In other words, different types of students are answering them the same way. And that's the key to it, and that's what we make sure happens.
Susan in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. I have two boys, one who went through the process 10 years ago, one's going through it now, and both of them do well, so this isn't a personal problem. But I have one question and a comment. One question is, why are the SATs so rigorously timed? Because that seems to be the biggest problem for all kids, I think of all races, that they have to answer, in some cases, 90 questions in 60 minutes. So that's my question.
Lawrence?
And the comment is that my older son went to Harvard, and during the commencement services, the president of the university, whose name is slipping my mind right now, said that the biggest, he thought, biggest discrepancy in America was that white kids take the prep courses and non-white kids do not.
He said
are
that.
Not able to take the prep courses. Therefore, the SAT does reflect a huge discrepancy racially in America. And I thought that was a very wise thing to say. Therefore,
so the president
Harvard was offering free courses.
The president of Harvard took a shot at the SAT
in 2004.
Commencement. Did that happen to be a current top economics advisor to President Obama?
Yes.
Lauren,
I can't remember his name.
Lauren Summers?
Yes.
So I don't know if you're familiar with that comment from Lauren Summers. Of course, we don't really know for sure if Susan recalls it accurately. But is this something you know?
Well, let me first start with the first question. Yes, we do have the SAT has a time limit, and that, of course, is just out of fairness to all students. And also, it's a practical consideration that high school counselors nationwide are the ones who actually administrate the SAT for us. And so, you know, just out of practical considerations, we need to be able to have the test finished so that those people can go home and so on. It's given on a Saturday.
Why so fast, though? Why that kind of pressure cooker?
Actually, it's interesting you say that because the SAT is actually less speeded than other tests. We actually have more time allowed for the students per question than other types of admissions tests. So I'm glad you asked that.
All right. And on Summers, if that's what he said?
Well, I'm not familiar with that particular quotation, but again, one of the topics that's been widely covered recently is getting the truth out about test prep. And the fact of the matter is that test prep has been widely shown that these expensive commercial courses do not result in large score gains. But what is true is that some of these companies market and promote that by charging the parents lots of money, that their students, their children will get very large score gains. But as you might have read in other press that's come out recently, that there's a lot of pressure on these commercial test companies now to not make false marketing claims about the performance on all these tests. The truth of what's in the research, and there's many independent studies on this, is that from taking a prep course, a student can expect somewhere in the range of 30 to 60 points across the whole test based on the prep course they take. But the truth of the matter is that these prep courses they can take can be very inexpensive or free. What students should really do is take some practice tests, get used to the format, get used to anything, like anything in life. A little practice and familiarity helps. We do recommend that, but it does not need to cost a lot of money.
Several of our listeners suggested that this is another example of the big educational problem, that it's up to schools to deal with this issue. In fact, that's what Jay Matthews suggested. You may not even disagree with his conclusion of what needs to be done. Here's what he said in response to a listener's comment, which I read here. And a similar comment, I think, from Frank from the East Village on our comments page. Why change the SAT? Would it hurt to prepare students by teaching the difference between idiomatic expressions and the correct usage of vocabulary? What do you say to him?
Well, I think that's absolutely right. That would be my solution to all of this. I've spent my life, the last 25 years, writing about the schools that are doing that, raising the level of low-income kids, tapping into their hidden abilities and getting them to a place where they're prepared for college.
Is that your opinion as well?
Jay's absolutely right about that. I mean, there is a discrepancy in our society that not all children are getting the same education. I mean, this is widely talked about. It's well recognized. This is the problem. The SAT is fair, and actually what it does, because it's a fair national benchmark, unlike other measures, unlike high school grades, which might be different by school or by curriculum, the SAT is a fair national benchmark, and it actually helps to shine a spotlight on this problem.
But then in our last 30 seconds, why are some schools now ceasing to use the SATs for college admission decisions and saying, we can tell enough from grade point average alone?
Well, this issue has been widely misreported. The truth is that well over 90% of four-year academic schools are requiring admissions tests, and that a small percentage are test optional. But even those test optional schools do get SAT scores from most of the students and use them. So what's really happening here is that colleges need to market also. Colleges are competitive with each other, and they want to seem to students like that they don't have very rigorous admissions requirements so that students feel comfortable sending in applications.
Right.
And we understand the need for colleges to be competing with each other.
Well, another side of the story after Tuesday's SAT segment, a follow-up Friday segment with Lawrence Boonen, who oversees the SAT program at the College Board. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We'll